podcast studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. It's the D-Fly and Dixie Show, featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network analyst, and my Homewood homeboy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it.
Did you, what child, I should say, what kid activity did you do this weekend?
I went to a wedding on Saturday. We're recording now.
All right.
Dix, welcome back to our another week of the D-Fly and Dixie Show.
Yes.
We only got like a couple more of these left in the season.
That's it?
This week and next week, yeah.
Yep. We got to do some special ones, though.
Yeah, we'll look.
You know we have to do, you know what I have to do is we have to do a phone interview of some sort with Chris Macon. I think he's become a cult sensation since we diagnosed and dissected the sky whammy a few weeks ago. He has become stuff of legend amongst people that listen to this podcast. So we'll have to have him on.
How was your weekend, Dix? You did a women's game.
Yeah.
TV, right?
Okay, I'm trying to think back to my weekend. Actually didn't have anything going on Friday night, which was really, really nice.
You didn't go over to the MIA championships?
No, didn't go. Yeah, my son plays for Loyola, as you know, and they lost in the semifinals to Calvert Hall. So I did not go over to the championship game.
Weather last week
was Noah's Ark type of weather. I think 7, 8, 9 inches of rain fell in the Baltimore area over a 4 or 5 day period. Frederick County, so you know, Frederick, Maryland, and places out west on your way up to West Virginia and Cumberland, Maryland. Man, I think they got like 5 inches of rain in a 2 hour period. You had cars were floating away in Home Depot parking lots and things of that nature. So, anyway. Friday, my wife and I watched a movie for the first time.
Go
in
to a
months.
Theater?
No, Netflix at home.
You get the DVD.
Well, hold on,
the
hold
mail,
on.
Right?
Let me rewind.
Okay.
Friday morning, I went running.
Whoa! How did it feel?
It felt terrible. I haven't gone in months. I mean, when I'm officiating, I run.
Yeah.
I think I documented that I worked out at Michigan a couple weeks back for the Big Ten tournament.
Yes.
And, I've fallen off big time on the cycling classes at Lifetime in Columbia. But I went running, and I felt good. I went about maybe 3.5-4 miles. I don't know. My legs were sore for 3 days. But it was like a good sore. It felt good. So then Friday night, my wife and I watched a movie. We watched the movie Shape of Water.
I haven't seen that. And I don't know if I want to watch
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was Academy Award winners.
Erica picked that, right?
No, I picked it.
Really?
I did. I'm fine with.
Isn't that like a creature? A janitor yes. falls in love with a creature?
You're exactly right. And I didn't really know what it was about. I just knew it was set in Baltimore but shot in Toronto, if that makes sense. So I don't know if we may have talked about this last year, but The Keepers, the Netflix show about the sexual abuse of a priest at Archbishop Keough High School, which became Seton Keough. So that the car that was left by the victim in that case, the victim's car was found right down the street from where my grandparents used to live on North Bend Road. So that was shot where my dad grew up, like all the area around there. So I'm like, you know, part of the fascination with the show, in addition to just the story and the women that were in there and this, you know, all the everything that went along with it making an outstanding documentary, was the fact that I recognized pretty much every place that they were going to, where, you know, they found the victim, where they searched for the victim, where they did this, where they did that. I have a ton of friends that went to Archbishop Keough, then subsequently Seton Keough High School. So that was like part of the neatness of it. So I think that's partly the reason I got the movie. But when you're there's nothing you recognized being Baltimore-ish in the film. You're not saying to yourself, oh, that's Mount Vernon, that's Fells Point, that's, you know, wherever throughout the city. And the story was weird, but it was good. It was a well-made film. I think it got the Academy Award for Best Picture.
It may have.
I can tell you don't want to talk about this, which is fine.
I just didn't see it. And
I think people know
it's
me
not
well
my
enough.
Kind of movie.
I know, and not mine either, but, you know, you got to spread your wings a little bit. But now I think what we have coming up in the queue is like Thor, Ragnarok. I think we've got Black Panther is coming up in the queue.
I almost watched that on Friday night. I realized that that is now available on iTunes to rent even.
Sure.
I can't believe that that's available yet. Usually that's the kind of thing that comes out in like another 6 months.
The turnaround is a lot quicker.
I'm going to watch that this week.
Do it.
For sure.
I have to let me know how it is.
Man, last weekend I had to go to a wedding on Saturday down in Virginia. Good wedding. Fun time. But again.
What part of Virginia?
Buellton, so down 29 between Culpeper and...
Oh, so you went far. You went far down south. Bit, on the way to Charlottesville.
It is. You know, there's a lot of, it's some Culpeper. Nice horse farms down there. Yeah. And it was a good time. It rained.
You didn't get lost, did you?
No.
You pulled into the two-pump gas station.
They have a lot of motels still, you know, like roadside motels that look like they have like 20 rooms. Those kind of places still exist.
And the highlight is the reason to stay there is air conditioning. We have air conditioning.
Cable TV.
With four channels.
But it was a good time. So I had to fix my watching around this. So some of it was watched on the phone, some of it on an iPad. We're kind of staying because I didn't have access to ESPNU. I had to use my streaming.
Mm.
But pretty good games on Saturday. Really exciting. But I kind of I went to the wedding. I had to have one of my buddies text me updates because I told it was the wedding started at 4:30. Right in the middle of that Albany-Denver game,
which great
was outstanding. So I had my buddy Matt, who I knew was watching because he'd been texting me things about the game. So right before the wedding starts, I pull my phone out. My wife's giving me the dirty look.
Of course.
And I text her. Tim, I said, hey, I'm at a wedding. Can you send me updates that I'll get through my my Apple Watch?
Oh, my God.
And then I can kind of just pretend like I'm looking at the time, but I'll be able to get the score updates. I don't have to actually pull my phone out.
Yeah.
So I'd like to give a shout-out to technology. Thanks, Steve Jobs, for keeping me up to date.
I think it'd be really funny.
And my friend Matt, for sure.
If your wife knew what you were up to and you're looking at your watch and she just, like, smacks you in the head and takes your watch.
She has an Apple Watch, too, so she caught on. During the ceremony,
no harm, no foul.
Because I was wearing a suit and I had to like do one of those, shake my arm one time to get my shirt, my jacket out of the way. And I was she saw what I was doing.
Where was that suit? Was that suit from graduation at Johns Hopkins like 25 years ago?
Yeah, unfortunately, at Inside Lacrosse, we have a pretty casual dress code.
Yeah.
That I'm probably the only one who's worn a jacket. Terry Foy, once in a while.
Industry Summit. Here. When he's in the Industry Summit, he pulls out the jacket.
Yeah, I haven't had to really wear a suit on a regular basis. Yeah. But when I was going to the wedding, I looked and I'd, grab a tie to take. I have about 200 ties.
I have a lot of ties.
From my previous jobs where I had to wear a suit or a tie every day.
Right.
So I was like, man, I what am I going to do with all these?
You didn't go to the men's warehouse?
No.
You're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it.
I do need to get a new shirt, though. Josh's wedding is coming up. Josh Davies.
Josh Davies, yes, Mr. Trimino.
He's getting married on June 9th.
No kidding.
It's a black tie wedding.
What?
And I'm looking for a new, like, cool white shirt that's not, like, a tux shirt.
Why is it a black tie wedding?
I don't know. He's a fancy guy.
Come on.
He's a fancy Lynchburg graduate.
Owings
Mills High, Lynchburg. He's the fancy.
Fancy head coach of the Park Bruins.
Yeah.
Black tie? It has to be in the evening then.
I believe it is.
Okay.
Is it the Visionary Art Museum?
Yeah. So right on Key Highway.
Really looking forward to it.
That's neat.
A swanky affair, I'm sure.
Is it going to be like the royal wedding when you walk in? We're presenting Mr. and Mrs. Dan Flynn of. What area do you live?
First League is what we'd say.
A First League.
My 2-year-old son, all he wants to do is ninja fight or. Like a knight, because he has these swords that he runs around the house and whacks you with. And I have to call him Sir Bennett of First League.
Oh, nice.
The name of our street that we live on.
Mr. and Mrs. Daniel. Are you a Daniel?
Yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. Daniel Flynn of First League. And then everybody, depending upon who they are, they give you the golf clap or the people give you the scowls like, you're not from Stoneleigh. You are not from Stoneleigh, sir.
Speaking of the royal wedding, the girl who got married, I went to, her name was Megan, too. So it was a little weird that she was not even the most important Megan getting married on Saturday.
Oh.
But I came downstairs on Saturday morning, and my wife and my 4.5-year-old daughter were sitting on the couch with the fascinator things on their head.
What's that?
And they had tea. It's like the hats that aren't hats. It's like the... You didn't see the royal wedding. It's a British thing.
It sounds like a ZZ Top name of a ZZ Top album, Fascinator.
So true.
It does.
But also, you probably saw a lot of them at the Kentucky Derby. Not so much at those Preakness. Did you
I
see
just
them?
Call them hats. Like, it's like not a fancy
hat,
hats.
It's not a hat. It's like a... It's a hat that you can't actually put over your head. Mm-hmm. It's like squashed down. It's like, and it just clips to your hair.
Oh, okay. So it's like a faux hat.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a fascinator.
A fascinator.
I didn't know what it All was right. either. And they had some scones and some croissants out and some strawberries. And
some biscuits.
Yeah. They were having their own little royal tea party. It was
That's
great.
Good for them.
I was aware they were going to do that, but I wasn't really sure of the
once you
execution.
Saw,
I was impressed.
Yeah.
I was
you
impressed.
Heard the game plan, but once you saw it come to fruition, you're like,
we would
wait
do for to watch a game. You know,
instead of having nachos and wings, they had biscuits and scones and fascinators.
And some proper Yorkshire tea.
From Yorkshire?
Yorkshire.
I'm now the Duchess of Sussex, I am. I'm from Cockney, I am. You want to talk about royalty. You mentioned the women's game that I covered for Big Ten Network on Saturday. Jeez. Maryland, 10th consecutive national semifinal for women's lacrosse. So congratulations to Kathy Reese and her Maryland Terrapin women's lacrosse team. They played Navy. And storyline was Cindy Timshaw, head coach at Navy, who coached for, I think, 16, 18 years at Maryland, won 8 national championships, including 7 in a row between 1995 and 2001. Yeah. And one of her star players was Kathy Reese, formerly Kathy Nelson. So that was really cool to see those guys go after it. And
I saw a picture that you texted or tweeted out.
That they were, the pregame Instagram. Meeting between them and the officials.
Hey, what's up with the end lines of that field? Side question. The turf, like the green turf runs out, and then there's like something behind the goal.
Yeah, it's like gray, like end zones almost. I don't know.
They play field hockey there too?
Yes, it's called the Maryland Lacrosse and Field Hockey Complex or Field Hockey Lacrosse Complex.
I'm wondering if I think a field hockey field is smaller.
Really?
And that may be why, but it just looks weird. Right?
It's a neat little venue. There was a great crowd on hand, and I don't know what the capacity is. It can't be more than like 500-600 people.
I've been the women's game there before.
It's a good environment.
I've been to a couple women's lacrosse games.
It's loud, and then you know fans will get behind each goal. Big chain link fence, big high fences that people stand behind. I was told that it looks like regular old school AstroTurf, but I was told that it actually isn't. It is a next generation kind of sport turf, but it's not the one that has the long grassy.
Correct. That's what it looks like. Because for field hockey, they want to...
Very fast surface.
Yeah, they even water it down with water cannons to make it play.
They'll use sprinklers. They have a sprinkler system
that
hoses it down or wets it down.
Yeah, that's a proper field hockey pitch.
But
has to be that material.
9-5 Maryland, and then Navy ended the first half 10-9 leading. Then Navy was up 14-11. They had this girl, Jenna Collins. I'm sorry, Julia Collins. There's a set of twins, Julia and Jenna Collins, both about 5'7", 5'8", 5'9". And the one, Julia Collins, had 8 goals. Her 8th was the 14th goal that they scored, and there was still like 15 minutes left in the game. And Maryland did something we'll talk about this as we talk about Maryland Cornell and the men's. They did something they never, ever, ever, ever do. They face-guarded Julia Collins the rest of the game. Didn't let her get the ball that much and held her scoreless. And then
worked.
It worked because Maryland ended up winning 17-15. It was a fantastic women's lacrosse game.
Yeah. So let's get on to the men's games.
Yeah.
Let's start with Saturday's game. Yale, 8. Loyola, 5. Ben Reeves, what a performance. Early, especially. Big, got off early. Reeves, 3 goals, 3 assists. And their goalie, a question mark for the Yale Bulldogs. Had a real nice game. 9 saves, only 5 goals allowed. As the Yale Bulldogs advance to the Final Four for the first time since 1990.
Yeah, and it's a lot of parallels. John Reese, considered to be the greatest lacrosse player in the history of Yale until Ben Reeves came along and pretty much broke all his records. And obviously they play different positions. But the word that most people use when it came to Yale entering the quarterfinals was balance, maybe complete. Star, the goaltending was the big question mark. So I thought he played really, really well. I thought Yale got control of the game early and put their stamp on it, established their identity, and then just kind of had control throughout. You know, very similar to Hopkins playing against Duke, you felt like Loyola was playing uphill all game in that one. And big win for the Bulldogs. I hope I get to meet. So I'm doing the radio this weekend for Westwood One, and I hope I get to meet Handsome Dan. who is their mascot. He looks like a lot of fun. I'd like to meet Handsome Dan.
So as we go through these games, I want to talk about the teams that lost and sort of where they're headed mm-hmm. next. We know what Yale's going on to the Final Four. But what's the postmortem on Loyola's team? They got a lot of guys coming back, a lot of talent, especially their star, Pat Spencer, for his senior year.
Yeah, Spencer had, 3 points, I think, in the game, played well, did everything he could. You also get back Jake Stover, the goaltender, who made, I think, 18, 19 saves, career high, on Saturday in the loss to Yale. So those are kind of the two guys that, I don't want to say define Loyola, but they've kind of been the faces of the program consistently the last couple of years, Spencer in particular. I mean, you get back, you lose some key guys. You lose Foster Huggins on the defensive end. You lose Jay Drapow out of the midfield. But you do get back a player like Alex McGovern comes back in the midfield. I think you need to look at the Ryan McNulty, the rope unit. McNulty's only a sophomore, so he'll be back, and he really came on late in the season.
Spencer's line mates are both young guys too, right? Don't they?
I think freshman
Olmstead and
Aiden Olmstead and Kevin Lindley. Yeah, both freshmen. Yeah. So they'll be back, and that attack line is intact. Yeah. So Brian Bagley's a senior. You know, you talk about McNulty in the rope unit. Bagley's a senior, so you lose him. But you know, the cupboard's not bare for Loyola, and I think going into Patriot League again next year. I mean, Loyola's the king of the Patriot League until proven otherwise, and then out of conference, they always play a great schedule, and they dominated Virginia in the first round of the NCAAs until the Cavaliers made a late run and cut that lead down a little bit. But yeah, I think it's exciting for Loyola. Obviously, you don't like the fact that you lost and you didn't go to championship weekend, but I think they feel good where they are and what the future holds.
Second half of that doubleheader at Hofstra played in a heavy rainstorm was the most exciting game of the weekend. Albany gets a 15-13 win over the Denver Pioneers. The Dane train advances to their first Final Four in school history. They were led by Kyle McClancy had three goals.
I like Kyle McClancy a lot.
Patterson
really
had three goals.
I like Patterson a lot. A
lot of balanced scoring. Nana Koch had three goals. Fields had three assists. And the matchup everybody was looking for, the Erlin-Baptiste matchup. We talked about this last week. How would either team adjust based on if it was a big differential, but it ended up being exactly 50-50?
I think both teams did well with their quote-unquote limited amount of possessions. It was, to me, what was interesting was, so I saw Trevor Baptiste face off against Alex Woodall last year when Towson played Denver. I called that game live, and Woodall was beating Baptiste with the clamp, getting it out into space, but he wasn't smart about it. Like, he wasn't – Baptiste was basically letting him win, and then he knew where Woodall was going to go, and then basically Baptiste is a better athlete than Woodall, and he would get to the spot and take the ball. This time, you saw when Erlin would lose the clamp, he'd wait for Baptiste to come up, and then he'd almost, like, check him or – And that's the knock on Erlin, is that he's not as strong as Baptiste. He's not as strong as Connor Mackey. But I thought he was just really crafty. And I guess I know the face-off gurus out there are going to probably go nuts, but I think that's called playing from behind. You know, when you almost – you don't concede it, but you lose the draw and you're like, okay, where is he going to exit? Where is he going to take it? And I thought he did a great job of just getting hands on his gloves, stick on his gloves, and eliminating – Baptiste from getting into space and picking it up clean. Those were some of the things I noticed, particularly down the stretch in that game, where I thought Erlin was really effective. The way that Denver shoots the ball, I saw it against Carolina earlier in the season. That was the first time I'd really sat down and watched a Denver game from start to finish. They shoot the hell out of the ball, and they did it again on Saturday. Colton Jackson, when he gets his feet set, just the power and the velocity the which he shoots, the force, that was impressive. And every time Albany would go on a run, get up by, 3-4, Denver would come back and chip. And, you know, so that they were never truly comfortable, Albany, that is, until that final whistle. But, man, talk about getting a monkey off your back. Not as big as, like people like to say, Donkey Kong with Maryland winning the national title last year, but you know, 07, they had Cornell beat. And then the Big Red came back and made a couple of plays to win that game in overtime. They had Notre Dame dead to rights in 2014. And credit Kavanaugh and the Irish for coming back and winning that one. The next time around, I never really thought that they threatened Notre Dame in 2015 in the quarterfinal in Denver at Stadium Authority Field or whatever Mile High Stadium is called these days out in Denver. And then and then last year they got blown away by Maryland in the quarter. So this was that was cool to see Scott Maher and the Dane train, you know, make the stop, pick up the dub, and now they're chugging up north, back up north to Foxborough.
It's fun to see some new teams,
yeah,
and their fans be rewarded with a trip to
the game's biggest stage.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So Denver finished the season at 13-4. Man, they're gonna. It's the end of the Baptiste era. And they'll be a very different team next year.
They will. And it starts at the dot. And Baptiste, just an epic, amazing career as a Denver Pioneer. Just still scratches, still boggles my mind to think that he could have played for our good friend Todd Cavalier at Franklin and Marshall, where he was set to go until late that summer or in that summer before his freshman year at Franklin and Marshall. He was discovered, quote-unquote, by Denver. So he'll be sorely missed by the Pioneers. They already said goodbye to Sean Mayall, the long stick midfielder who was academic or, you know, ineligible, and he's actually begun his pro career playing for the Chesapeake Bayhawks. But there's other guys that are going to be missed as well. Colton McCaffrey is an attackman, I think, that played some nice minutes throughout his career in Denver. Just looking at the roster right now to see all the guys that are missing. I mean, this is not a... Other than Baptiste, I don't think this is like a senior-laden team in terms of their main men. You know, Connor Donahue's a midfielder that had some impact during his career. But other than that, I mean, you're looking at Baptiste. You're looking at this is a heavy junior class for the Denver Pioneers. I look at Colton Jackson. I look at Austin French. I look at Dylan Gaines.
Ready.
Nate Morano, Alex Reddy in the goal. And I thought Reddy actually played pretty well the last month of the season. So this is a team that probably, if you want to characterize it, is probably a quote-unquote down year. But a down year for Denver means quarterfinals.
Yeah, 7 of the last 8 years have been in the quarterfinals.
Not too
bad. Yeah, that's fantastic. Dix, protein is an important part of any athlete's diet. Trimino protein-infused water has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your workout, and it tastes great. Comes in 7 delicious flavors, including 3 new ones, citrus, orchard, and raspberry limeade. I've had them all, and they're all tasty. You can grab one at CVS, your local retailer, or even on Amazon.com.
We are plumb out of Trimino here at the Inside Lacrosse headquarters. Plumb out. I saw Trimino. Where did I see Trimino? I've already seen it at Giant. I saw it someplace else last week.
You saw it at Wine Merchant.
I did. Yes. Was that it? Okay. Yeah. I saw it at Wine Merchant. Yep. I was walking in to grab some lunch and it was, hey, Dixon. I'm like, oh boy, which way is this going to go? Luckily, it was Josh Davian.
Trimino increases energy and endurance and even curbs your appetite.
Josh Davey gets a lot of publicity on this podcast.
Yes, by the way. We talk about him way too much.
He's a good guy, though.
Yeah, he's the best.
I don't mind.
Play hard, not hungry.
He doesn't know the Park School song, though.
He needs to learn that.
He's the head coach at Park School and doesn't know the Park School song. He does need to learn that.
Well, they have a tradition. They sing it after every victory. It just didn't sing it a lot this season.
Oh. As the kids would say, roasted. Oh, my goodness. You went, no, you didn't.
Let me finish this read, please.
Okay.
Play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good. All right, let's get back to these quarterfinal games on Sunday down at the Naval Academy. Maryland 13, Cornell 8. Cornell held Connor Kelly in check for most of the game.
Yep.
For most of the way. Bubba Fairman had a big game. 3 goals, 2 assists. Jared Bernhardt, 3 goals, 1 assist. And the Terps move on to the Final Four yet again.
5 in a row, and I believe it's now 7 out of the last 8 years for John Tillman. So this is Syracuse had the run of 22 straight championship weekends, Final Fours, whatever you want to call it, national semifinals.
An amazing streak.
That was unbelievable. And then Duke had their run of eight between, it ended in 2014, so what, 07 through 14, eight in a row. Yeah, Maryland's just become a model of consistency, and they're back for another round in Foxborough with a very different team from 2017.
So what did you think of this game? They decided to shut off Jeff Teat. That was a question mark whether they would do that or not. And Teat just he seemed almost content to allow that to happen. That was the critique after the game, the hot take.
It's not easy being shut off because then you work to get the ball and then now you have the ball on your stick and you know what's going to happen. Like you're going to the goal, and I thought he did a decent job of getting a couple of possessions early in the game. I didn't think Cornell shot well early in the contest. I thought Dan Morris made several saves, but I thought the shot locations for Cornell were pretty poor. There were some easy saves for Morris early in the game. But when Teat got the ball, it was almost like a backer zone by Maryland. They had a guy waiting to go when he took a step toward the cage. Here's the biggest thing for me, and this is not throwing shade at Maryland in any way, shape, or form. I was actually disappointed that Maryland face-guarded him. I know why you face-guarded Jeff Teat, but the quarterfinals are a time where a lot of people drop in to watch lacrosse, both non-lacrosse fans, but more importantly, like lacrosse people who just don't watch lacrosse during the season, and they've been hearing about this Jeff Teat guy, hashtag free Jeff Teat, and Teat should be on the Touraton list, and Teat this, and I don't dispute any of that, but he's shut off. And you don't get to see his abilities. You don't get to see one of the most dynamic players in the game showcase his abilities. Again, I'm not hating on Maryland. They had to do what they had to do to win the game. And it was proven by Brown. It was proven by Syracuse that if you take Jeff Teat out of the game, it gives you a much, much better chance to win the contest. And Princeton did it. Back at the end of the regular season as well in Ivy League play. So I'm not hating on Maryland by any stretch of the imagination, but I think I said it last week, like face guarding is kind of a women's lacrosse thing. Maryland did it for the first time in God knows how long with the girl from Navy on Saturday. It takes you out of your game and you can set picks and you can do this and you can do that to get but your game has been compromised. And if Teat would have handled, I haven't gone through the statistics of the game. I don't know how many touches he had. I know he had two assists in the contest, but let's say he touched the ball 10 times in the game. He touches it 20 now. Yeah, I think Cornell probably has a better chance to win that game, but he's under so much duress and so much, it takes a lot of effort to get the ball. I'm not saying don't expend the effort. Again, I'm just like, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'd have done the same thing if I was Maryland. Make other people beat you, and Cornell has failed to show that other guys are going to beat you.
But overall, it made the game less exciting for
absolutely.
Fans at home, like me.
And I said to somebody, our Rough Rider, Maryland Rough Rider 2022s played on Sunday morning and won championship of the Maryland Premier, something at the MPLL is what it's called. So nice championship win for the Rough Riders in that league, in that championship game. But I was talking to several people, leaving the field, and I was like, this Maryland-Cornell game is the one of the weekend that I think could be a blowout, especially if Teat is shut off and Cornell can't play well offensively. And I think Maryland was up at 1.78 goals, and then Cornell made a run.
Yeah, they made a nice run.
They made a great run.
It wasn't enough.
But it wasn't enough. So enough of that. Bubba Fairman stepped up again, second week in a row. He was terrific against Robert Morris. He was sensational against Cornell. You got to credit the defensive effort, Pulver in particular, of the Big Red for limiting Connor Kelly. Logan Wisnowskis got back on the scoring sheet and looked a little bit more like himself. I thought, Michael Adler played well. Longstick Mitty, I thought Corley played well. I thought that Maryland just did what they had to do. It's like that first round game gives them so much trouble, but they typically dominate in the quarterfinals. They dominated Albany a year ago. They dominated Cornell this year, and they move on.
So as we say goodbye to Cornell, they finished 13-5, Ivy League champions.
Yep.
They have a lot coming back.
Oh, the one player,
that's exciting for
the
them.
One, the big player of note that graduates and leaves Ithaca is Christian Knight, the goaltender. Sure. And I thought he was pretty good, darn good on Sunday. I thought he was pretty darn good all season long.
And we're expecting Peter Milliman to become the
God, you would hope, right?
But if he doesn't, whoever inherits that program has got a lot to look forward to.
That would, I mean, from the out, who knows the internal workings?
Sure.
That would be pretty messed up if he's not named the
official head coach.
Official head coach of the Cornell Big Red. I don't, but
yeah, I don't know.
I don't know the ins and outs of the Cornell athletic department, so I don't know, you know, why he hasn't been named already.
All right, last game of the weekend,
and this is where I'm curious to see how Dan Flynn handles this conversation. This is where the rubber meets the road. Let's go.
I had a bunch of friends over on Sunday to watch the game.
And we're talking about what game?
The Hopkins-Duke game.
Okay.
I mentioned I was at this wedding on Saturday. Was down in Central Virginia. I had to drive back. Didn't get home in time to get home and then go to Annapolis. So I made the decision to just have some people over. I have a really nice situation. I have a screened-in back porch with suing family.
We have recorded the podcast there.
So we sit outside, watch the game outside and watch. It was a fun time. Had some good buddies come over to watch the game.
And you had a TV outside?
Yeah, of course.
Is this RIP to the TV outside of Dan Flynn's house because you put your foot through it or you threw it off the deck?
No.
Smashed it over your head?
I was very disappointed after the game.
Disappointed? You were on fire after the game. As your friend and co-host, I can tell you that...
Mark and I exchanged many text messages on
Sunday
night.
You were reminding me of the stereotypical, older, disgruntled, disgusted Hopkins lacrosse alum. You really had me thinking that way. You were pissed.
I was. Because I felt like Hopkins actually had some chances there.
They did.
They really did. Especially, what was it at halftime? 7-4?
7-3.
I thought it was 7-4.
It was 7-3 at half.
Okay. But Hopkins comes out and they have 2-man advantage.
Yep.
And get
Nothing.
Like the shot that went right into the goalie stick on the crease. A decent look, but like, where? How about a shot fake? You know, you got to score there. And that was a huge momentum changer. I think it was a big relief for Duke and for Hopkins. They had to be like, oh, God, we had to score there. And they didn't. That said, they did make a nice run when it was 9-4, and Hopkins cut it to 9-8.
Yeah.
But
it looked like the comeback kids were going to be able to make another.
Which was so, that was
so
thrilling,
it went from 9-5 after a, and that was, to me, the backbreaker of this game was when Hopkins got it to 7-5, then they gave up 2 goals in the last 16 seconds against Duke at the end of the third quarter. It was very reminiscent of what happened to him up at Penn State when they gave up a buzzer beater at the end of the third quarter to the Nittany Lions. That to me, I'm thinking, oh my, instead of being down by 2, okay, you're down by 3, okay. But then you get that buzzer beater. Brad Smith scored on that. That was a flag down situation. And it almost seemed like Hopkins stopped playing when the flag was thrown because Smith caught a feed and had 3 Blue Jays around him in the interior and scored that goal. I thought that was a critical part of the game.
Yeah, and then when they had cut it to 9-8, Duke scored
Hopkins
3
responded.
Goals.
They responded, but
so fast and to make it 12-8.
Perfect language, perfect description. It seemed like Hopkins, you know,
worked really hard.
You're trying to get that kiss from the pretty girl. You got to work it. You know, you're doing everything. You're pulling out all the stops. You're working so hard, and then you finally get there. You finally get there, and you're 9-8. Got all the momentum, all the energy.
Crowd's behind you.
And then the ex-boyfriend shows up, and she runs up to the ex-boyfriend, and all of a sudden it's, you know, all your work is for nothing.
Man, sounds like you speak from experience there.
You can cut that out if you want.
But, no, I'm with you. And it looked like Duke scored easily when they scored, and Hopkins had to work and work and work to get their chances. But the better team won, you know. Duke was a number one preseason team. In our face-off yearbook, they're number one early in the season, had a great year, deservedly in the Final Four.
Yeah.
By the way, our face-off yearbook, top four.
Are all in the Final Four.
Duke, Albany, Yale, Maryland.
Yeah. I was trying to remember. I gave an interview earlier today to Sirius Radio, Paul Mittermeier. I guess he was saying, with this crazy year, are you surprised that all top four seeds made it through? I was like, well, think back to January when you picked up the Inside Lacrosse Face-Off yearbook and your top five. I couldn't remember an exact order, but two of your top five are Yale and Albany. And people, like, it was a changing of the guard back then, and now fast forward, what, 4 or 5 months, and here we are in championship weekend, and you've got Yale and Albany. Like, it's wild. It's wild.
But we called it.
Yeah, got it right for once.
Yeah. We didn't do so well on the, 6 through 10 teams.
Let's not talk about that. Why do you got to be like that? Yeah, and Denver was number 5. So, I mean, if we were doing an exit poll of the four teams that lost this weekend, how would you rank the four teams that lost?
Oh, that's a good question.
1 through 4.
I think Loyola might be the best team.
So you go Loyola 1. Okay. They did beat Hopkins in the regular season. Did not play Cornell, did not
then
play
I
Denver.
Would go,
Denver didn't play any of them. Cornell didn't play any of them. So
I would say Loyola, Hopkins,
Denver, Cornell. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. And Cornell, you know, in our preseason picks were way down. I think they were 30 in the preseason.
They had a great season.
Hopkins and Loyola were 11 and 12. And I think, Denver was our fifth team. So
mm-hmm.
The key story of this game coming out of it was the maturation of Duke's freshmen.
Sure.
Can I use that cliche now that at this time of the year, freshmen aren't freshmen anymore?
They're not freshmen anymore. They've played a lot of lacrosse and, they're not freshmen. They, they might have hit the wall, but now they're over the wall, and we need them to perform.
They climbed over the wall.
We need to perform at a high level. Yeah, go ahead and use that coach speak.
Yeah, Kai Montgomery, Joey Robertson.
Yeah,
had some really good games. Just
the Kai Montgomery, the two goals in a minute. They were impressive. The first goal, great move, little shimmy, gets underneath, gets his right hand, scores. The second one that he scored, I'm like. I was watching with a group of people, and I think just the analyst in me came out because Kark was describing the goal, and he said something like, somebody might want to tell Nakai Montgomery that he's a freshman. And I said out loud, just instinct, I'm like, somebody might want to tell Hopkins he's a righty because they had him down the alley. All they needed was a little bump, a little squeeze to take away his angle with the stick in his left hand. But then, I can't remember exactly what Hopkins did defensively, but they allowed him to get underneath of him, get his right hand, get right on top of Turnbull and score the goal. That's when you're just like, man, that's a great play. That is a great play by Montgomery, but it's also very poor defense, in my opinion, by Hopkins. And that kind of, I don't want to say it sums it up because it's not that simplistic, but I know Duke got a goal off of a failed clear by Hopkins where two of their shorties dropped passes. They dropped passes. You know, the initial drop was in the box area, and a player, I can't remember who it was, but then, you know, the clear became much tougher than it needed to be. And then he gets over the midfield line, he goes to throw the ball to one of his line mates, and he just dropped it. And not only did he drop it, he, like, walked to go get it. It was like, I mean, maybe they were gassed, I don't know, but it was a hot day. Man, quarterfinals are on the line, man. You gotta bust out.
So Duke moves on to the Final Four for the first time for this senior class. The Blue Jays finish the season 12-5 with a Big Ten championship.
Still a very good year for Johns Hopkins lacrosse. Very good year. When you rewind and you think about where this program, where this team was last year after the loss to Duke.
Yeah.
I mean, this game, yeah, Duke had control of it for the most part, but when you get to 9-8, anything can happen. You just need to make a play here, make a play there, step up, and Duke's the one that made the plays.
Now, this senior class came in as our number one ranked recruiting class.
I see you looking at your Apple Watch. You're getting an update from some sort?
Hit some move goal or something. I've been sitting here for 45 minutes.
Oh,
I hit a move goal somehow.
That's neat.
Yeah, burning some calories.
Waving your arms around like a maniac. Come on, man. This is a good senior class.
I'm going to finish. So this senior class leaves Hopkins with two Big Ten championships and one Final Four trip back in 2015. But this team seemed to have like a lot of senior leadership.
They did.
Turnbaugh, Tinney,
Shaq.
Shaq Stanwyck.
Britton Vallis.
Yeah. So what do the Hopkins Blue Jays look like going forward for 2019?
Well, they lose a lot.
Yeah.
You know, Hunter Moreland at the faceoff dot. He's gone. Tal Bruno, special tip of the cap to number 50, who made news last week for rescuing a dog out of a burning car. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that.
Are you going to say that this is a senior class that never had anybody rescue a dog out of a burning car? No, that happened. right next door to where I lived in college at the St. Paul Court. So they lose Tal Bruno.
Why was a car on fire with a dog in it there?
Dude, it's Baltimore. It's Charles Village. You figure it out. I have no idea.
If you're not familiar with Baltimore, like where Hopkins is, obviously like the university has its own little security force and it's pretty safe right around Hopkins, but there's a sort of a gray area and then the neighborhood gets a little sketchy you get down.
This was Charles Village, which is very nice. Yeah. I mean, it's
but a few blocks,
a lot nicer from where. Oh yeah. Oh, you go
east a couple blocks.
Yeah,
east
you're
and
in,
south a
you're
couple blocks. Yeah, yeah, it gets shady quick.
Yeah,
but man, he rescued a dog.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. That's incredible. Awesome. But yeah, he's part of a senior class. I'm trying to, you know, Thomas Guida played well down the stretch. You've got Patrick Frazier. Scored a lot of big goals during his career. He bids adieu to
a lot of holes to fill.
There are. And then, of course, the overarching theme is Jeremy Huber, the young man who passed away before his first
spring season
at Johns Hopkins, which I know number 19 was in all the Blue Jays' hearts all 4 years, let alone this past weekend. There's a lot to replace. There's a lot to replace on this Johns Hopkins team.
But there's also a lot of bright spots. You know, you think about the attack with Kyle Maher and
Cole Williams.
And Williams. And you got Connor DeSimone.
Probably
our number one recruit coming in.
Patrick Foley's back on defense.
The whole
defense is back.
A kid named Joey Epstein, who's the number one recruit in the country. He's an attackman. Will be coming to Hopkins. So there's a lot of bright spots. Who's going to play goal?
Good question.
Who's gonna
Darby is, I believe, their only goalie on the roster, if I'm not mistaken, other than Brock Turnbull at this point. I'm looking through the roster right now, and Ryan Darby, is that his name, right? Yeah, Ryan Darby is the only other goalie listed on the roster. Young man who's a freshman out of Texas. So he was the backup this year to Brock Turnbull.
But the defense
is back. Yep.
Offense.
Robert Kuhn's back at the long stick midfield position. Danny Jones is back at shorty. And you got guys that got a lot of playing time this year. Brett Baskin kind of fell off a little bit, you know, from early season action. But the UMBC game is one I remember. He scored two big goals in that one. Yeah, we mentioned Kincannon, DeSimone, Forey Smith, who didn't play much this year. Maybe he gets more opportunity next year. So you do have some pieces on the offensive end to make some things happen.
And one of the things that was well publicized was Hopkins' new approach to just handling the grind of the season to make the guys fresher at the end of the year, and it showed. I mean, this is a team who was not in our top 10 in the preseason. I think we checked in at number 11 in our face-off yearbook. Came together, won the Big Ten championship, and made it to the quarterfinals. So maybe surpassed what the expectations were.
Yeah.
The realistic expectations of the general public.
Preseason yearbook, Johns Hopkins was not a top 10 team. Not many people expected a whole lot out of this team because they kind of expected a rebrand of 2017. And I think that, you know, Dave Petromala said that we've had a little bit of a culture change, we've had a philosophical change. We've had a tactical change, and they executed it. And I thought this team was fresher down the stretch in 2018 than they had been in years past.
I'm glad we're doing this on Tuesday, recording this on Tuesday, not Monday morning.
I have to say, I'm proud of you.
I've digested it.
You've come around a little bit.
Digested.
I mean, I was waiting for you to go on Lax Power on Sunday night and just guns blazing, just spraying everywhere.
That's the kind of guy
your venom.
I am.
No, you're not. But you were scaring me. I was like, dude, you gotta relax. It's not the end of the world.
All right, Dixie, let's get to some listener calls and questions. And the one thing that we keep hearing is how to approach championship weekend as a fan, what to do. So let's take this call from one of our friends of the pod, David Leathers, who's coming in from Madison, Wisconsin. So like, not exactly a hotbed of lacrosse. He's a big Marquette fan, though. Mm-hmm. He's going to his first championship weekend. So here's his call.
Hey, D-Fly and Dixie. This is David calling from Madison, Wisconsin. And first, I just wanted to say thanks for taking my call earlier in the season about Marquette. This week, I have a twofold question for you guys. So my lady and I are actually going to be going out to Boston for the Final Four this year. And so my first question is, do you guys have any good Boston recommendations, either food spots to hit up or just general things that would be fun out there? And secondly, I was wondering if you guys had any tips around just attending the games themselves. This is the first time I'm going out to the Final Four. So I saw there's a fan fest we might go check out, but just if you guys had any other general tips. But yeah, thanks so much, and I'll look for your guys' answer on the podcast. Take care.
All right, David, thanks for the call.
One of my good friends, is she from Madison? Good friend of mine that I went to Johns Hopkins with, you know her as well, is from Madison, Wisconsin.
What's her name?
Go ahead, try to guess.
I don't know.
You know. Nancy Lentz.
She's from Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, she's from Wisconsin, yeah. Nancy Lentz.
She turned out to be a great lacrosse player, right?
All-American. Never picked up a stick till she got to Johns Hopkins. Yeah. It was a third-team All-American by her senior year.
Very good athlete, very fast, very fit.
Mm-hmm.
Was she a powerlifter, too?
She was a bodybuilder when she got to Johns Hopkins, and then she started playing lacrosse. And was just a fantastic athlete. But not only that, 4.0 student at Johns Hopkins, graduated from Hopkins, went to Harvard Med School for, I think, a semester and a half, where she had a 4.0, decided she really didn't want to go to med school since she lived in the Boston area, as we're going to talk about Boston. Taught at a school named Roxbury Latin, and then she came back to Baltimore, and then re-entered medical school at the University of Maryland Medical Center and medical school, graduated top of her class, went down.
Just complete underachiever.
Went down to Duke and did a fellowship, and now I believe she's in Guam practicing medicine. Yeah. How about that?
That's someone who got the most out of Hopkins, right? She had never played lacrosse before.
How about that?
Knew it was important at the school.
All-American.
Tried out for the team, came an All-American, while getting a 4.0.
That's like me deciding to swim for George Kennedy. And like, you know, I would have drowned probably, let alone become made the team and become like any type of contributing excellent member of the squad. Unbelievable.
You would have been like one of those team guys. You look great in one of those. What are those little capes that they wear? One of those things?
I thought you were going to say I look great in a Speedo. No.
The capes that they wear on the side.
I know exactly what you
mean.
Bathing cap as well.
Yeah. You're awesome.
How about that?
God, the sight.
Remember how hot the pool was at Hopkins?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you wanted to lose a few pounds.
Remember when a guy died in the pool?
No.
Yeah, there would be people who'd come from time to time, like people in the community come in. Yeah. Just a really old guy was swimming and he died swimming in the pool, had a heart attack or something.
Are you serious?
Yeah, to drain the pool, clean it out. I mean,
it's like Caddyshack.
The usual things I guess you have to do. But I mean,
I don't mean to laugh. That's
I don't mean
tragic.
To make a joke of that's it. Tragic. But it was a long time ago. But I just remember it happening. I was just like, oh, that's so.
I don't remember hearing about that.
It's so weird. That's a part of the athletic center I just didn't go over too much.
It was definitely the.
I've never been in that pool.
Kind of the east wing.
I've never been
the west
in that
wing.
Pool.
The west wing of the of the athletic.
But the humidity would just drift out in the hallway.
Like people, close the door, man. It's too hot.
Oh man!
And the fan was always running. Like you open up the door.
Yeah, so true. All right, so Boston.
Yeah.
All right, so in general, my take on the going to the Final Four, no matter where it is, it's a celebration of lacrosse, and especially if you're not from a hotbed like. You know, if you're from around here, you can go to one of the local colleges, and they do their games. If you watch the Hopkins game on TV, you can see that they have festivities around the game, you know, inflatable stuff for kids, a kid's zone, you know, there's some tailgating and stuff. This is the ultimate experience. And you don't even have to be a fan of any of the teams. You go in there because you're just a lacrosse fan. Mm-hmm. So when you, my recommendations, buy a parking pass that is in one of the main lots at Gillette.
That's good. That's something good piece of advice.
They have ample parking there. You know, if they get a great crowd, there'll be 40,000 people, right? That'd be a great crowd. It would surpass most of the recent crowds that they have. Now, Albany might bring 40,000 people just themselves, but
on the Dane train.
Obviously, for Patriots games, they can hold 75, 80,000 people in the stadium. So there's ample parking. That's not going to be a problem. But a lot of it can be across the highway.
I think it's important that you describe Gillette Stadium from the standpoint of, so M&T Bank Stadium, where the national championships were in 2014, I want to say.
In Baltimore.
M&T Bank Stadium is within walking distance of hotels, restaurants, bars, everything.
Yeah, in a hotel. So you can park your car at your hotel and never get in your car again.
The Link, Lincoln Financial, is not, but you have a metro system, a train system that will drive, will give you rides out if you don't want to drive.
Yeah.
Gillette Stadium is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
it's in the middle of nowhere.
It's directly between Boston
and Providence. Yeah.
So Foxborough, it's come a long way. But the stadium footprint, you can't go all the way around it. So there's the Patriots training complex is at one end of it, and it's sort of shut off. So you approach it from, you know, like think of like a horseshoe. You can get to everything except the open side, right? So the and then there's a main road, Route 1, I believe it is.
I don't know.
So if you're parking on the other side of Route 1, you're just a distance from everything. You can obviously walk to the stadium, but
it's not an easy walk.
It'll take you 15 minutes.
And it's treacherous.
And you go under a tunnel.
You can go under a tunnel to get out of the tunnel.
They recommend you do that.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of Massachusetts state troopers around. So, and they, you know, you can't carry your beer from your car to the place.
What if you had like a corksicle or something like that? It could hold like a whole bottle of wine or six beers.
So my recommendation, spend the extra bucks and buy the parking pass to get you close to Gillette Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one side of the stadium is sort of the closer to Boston side, the north side, I guess it is, of the stadium.
It's closer to Boston.
Is a great tailgating area. On the south side of the stadium, I would probably guess, the south or west, is where the Fan Fest sets up.
The southeast?
And that's where the street, the suite level entrance is. But that's also where Patriot Place is. So I guess that's the way to distinguish it. On the Patriot Place side is where the Fan Fest is.
And Patriot Place, just FYI, is a huge complex.
Entertainment complex.
That not only do you have Gillette Stadium, but there's a hotel on the grounds. And then there's restaurants, bars, shops, but it's big box stores.
Yeah.
Indigenous to Boston.
Yeah, so lots of chains, but big restaurants that are, I wouldn't go to any of them pregame, but great meeting spot postgame to go, you know, out or have dinner after the games. But
going to the Red Lobster.
Pregame, plan on your tailgating. And you can kind of just find your spot, and there'll be revelers all around you who are usually pretty welcoming.
Yeah.
You know, you can just walk up to them.
Well, it is lacrosse.
Yeah.
I was going to say Boston in particular is not very welcoming.
But I know I have just been able to sort of walk around, and you just meet up with someone, and they're like, hey, have this. Have
but
you want a sandwich?
But they know you're D-Fly.
That could be it. I mean, I'm not just walking up to strangers.
Yeah.
But I've just...
hey, how you doing? Why don't you get in your car and get on out of here before you get hurt? You understand what I'm saying? We know you want trouble, you found trouble, all right?
But again, Saturday is the best day. All the fan bases are there. Even the Division II and Division III fan bases are there on Saturday. There's a lot of excitement. It feels like the culmination of the whole season.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. It's also the first day of the weekend, and
everybody's bursting
with excitement.
Nobody's sunburned yet. Nobody's hungover. And all four teams are still in play.
Yes. Yes. So definitely go on Saturday. So I had a buddy who texted me yesterday. He's going. He's not a lacrosse guy. He's a baseball guy. But his kid got the bug. He's got like a 10 or 11-year-old kid.
Good for him.
Who plays. And they're going for the first time. And this kid has sort of fallen in love with Maryland. He's a big like Matt Rambo fan.
Okay.
Going up to Boston for the game. I said, oh, that's great. You're going to have so much fun on Saturday. He said, not going on Saturday. Going to the Red Sox game.
What?
He always wanted to go to a Red Sox game. It's on his bucket list. He wants to go to Fenway Park. I said, well, do that.
That's a Sunday activity.
Do that Saturday night. Do that Sunday.
You got to go when the game's being played. But, I mean, I think the Red Sox are home. Well, if they're home on Saturday, they're going to be home on Sunday.
So I said, what are you doing? Saturday is the best day of the season. Like, you can't. And he said, well, that's when I have to go to the game. So he then said on Sunday, I said, go to the game, Red Sox game on Sunday. He said his kid is playing in the NCAA Futures Tournament.
Oh, okay.
And he's got games all day.
And how old's his son?
Between 10 and 12, I think. Maybe well, 11.
I know when my oldest, Matt, was younger, I want to say this is 03, 04. I just remember taking Matt on a Sunday to the D3 games, and it was easier to manage because it wasn't much of a crowd. He was a lot younger. But he's not that young, so he should be able to handle the Saturday crowd.
So we'll get to that, but I'm explaining that my buddy, he's doing it wrong. So then he also is basically going to go to the Monday's championship game, and he's a big Maryland fan. I'm like, you're not 100% guaranteed they're going to even be playing.
Yeah,
so if your kid really wants to see his favorite team play, he should go
Saturday.
So, Mike, you're doing it wrong, man. You're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So the other thing, so Saturday, get there very early, pay that extra money to get a good parking space, tailgate, get into the games, and enjoy all the stuff. And get over to the Fan Fest. Check that out. It's fun. Sunday, most underrated day of the whole weekend. Those games, the Division III game and the Division II game, are going to be, they're usually great.
They're good games.
And these guys, it's very good lacrosse, and they're playing for a championship as well. And it's usually a fun day. But definitely low-key.
Yep.
A lot of hungover people there on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then Monday is the national championship.
Yep.
I mean, it can't get better than that. Although a lot of people are then hitting the road right after it.
Yeah.
So the tailgating beforehand isn't as vigorous. So that's why Saturday, again, is like the best day to go.
Yeah.
Now, David, you said you're staying in Jamaica Plains, which is just south of Boston, like downtown Boston.
Is it? Okay.
It's just out a little south of where Fenway Park is, and you know, maybe 5 miles or something like that.
Okay.
Go into downtown Boston.
Yeah, you got to go
and
downtown.
Go over to the North End. North End is where all the great Italian restaurants are.
Faneuil Square?
Faneuil Hall is up that way, too, with a couple blocks away.
How do you say that?
Faneuil.
Faneuil, with an F.
Yeah, Faneuil.
Faneuil. That's always Faneuil or something for some reason.
But the restaurants, you almost can't go wrong. Just pick an Italian restaurant and go into it. I think I ate at a place called Lemoncello or something like that. That was fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
The food is great. And there's a lot of history there, too, like the old North Church and a whole bunch of other cool stuff is just right there. So you'll see history and great food up there. And then you'll drive down to the stadium.
Where do you get some chowder?
And you got to hit a Dunkin' Donuts or two.
Oh, yeah, they're like every block.
They are almost every block.
The birthplace of Dunkin' Donuts is in Boston.
Hit up a Dunkin' Donuts and get the real deal. And near the stadium, there's nothing. Once you get within like half mile, a mile, if you're going to get some beer or your tailgating supplies, get that close to wherever you're staying. Because as you get closer to the stadium, as you start to get into traffic, there's not a lot of options. So you're going to want to make sure you have that stuff. You know, your cooler packed and everything.
I got a good
before you get close.
I've got a good Dunkin' Donuts story. This was right after graduating college. I want to say it was maybe like 96, 97 ish. I was visiting a friend in Boston. She lived in Dorchester. Dorchester's. And we had to return a movie, the Blockbuster of all places. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll go. It's like Saturday afternoon.
This is a thing that actually used to happen, kids.
Yeah, exactly. Go in, there's a line out the door. So I'm like, what is going on here? And it was Baba Booey and Hank the Angry Drunken Dwarf making an appearance
at Howard Stern.
Video signing autographs and doing a meet and greet with fans.
Was it for private parts?
That was right around that time. Maybe.
So they couldn't get Howard or Robin or Fred or anybody.
Yeah, or Jackie. So they got Fafa Flohi and Hank.
I didn't get in the line, but I went.
So the way that the video store, and a lot of people might not even know about a video store, but it's just like aisles of
VHS tapes.
Back then, I think it was VHS.
Yeah, it was VHS.
And then they became the DVDs. But you could, like the line.
Be led, kind, rewind.
Yeah, but I was on the aisle over from Hank and Fafa Flohi. So I was like looking, I was literally like 5 feet from both, but I wasn't getting, I wasn't going to wait and get, you know, I didn't need all that. But it was, yeah, it was Bubba, it was Gary Delabate and Hank the Angry Drunken Dwarf. How about that?
Fantastic. Cool. I think we may have an episode title. Either Be Kind, Rewind, or Fla-Fla-Flooey.
Fla-Fla-Flooey.
All right, that's how you do championship weekend.
Now, what are the foods that you mentioned? Italian food, but if you go to Boston, see, I'm allergic to shellfish, so yeah. I can't have clams, mussels, oysters, and clam chowder is what you get when you go to Boston, right? So, what are the foods you would recommend?
Get a lobster roll.
Okay, I can't do that. Yeah. What else?
Boston baked beans. I don't know. I feel like they eat the same food we have here. I don't think there's anything besides Dunkin' Donuts and
okay.
I don't think there's anything in particular.
But you can get Dunkin' Donuts here.
You can.
So in other words,
it's not good.
Well, I was just gonna say,
you know, Sully or Fitzy making it for you.
So maybe you run into Ray Donovan when we're up there. You know, like, see Mickey. So like bagels in New York. Everybody says the bagels in New York are so much better than Baltimore.
They
for instance.
Are.
So you're saying Dunkin' Donuts in Boston are better than the Dunkin' Donuts in Baltimore?
The coffee's better.
Really? Okay. I don't eat Dunkin' Donuts, so I couldn't, you know.
Donuts are kind of the same. The coffee's better.
Okay. And I don't drink coffee, so I wouldn't know.
Don't eat seafood.
It's not that I don't eat. I'm allergic. So that's...
Don't eat donuts.
I eat donuts. I just don't eat Dunkin' Donuts. Okay. I eat donuts. I just don't eat Dunkin' Donuts.
You don't drink coffee.
I don't drink coffee. No. I just don't. What do you want
Foxborough runs on Dunkin'.
What's the matter with you? But listen to you. Foxborough runs on Dunkin'. See, this is really, really nice. I didn't know what to expect in this podcast. I thought you were going to be apoplectic over the Blue Jays. But here we are. We're laughing. We're having a good time. Yeah. We're talking about Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah.
When I'll
be your Huckleberry.
I was in a meeting before when Dixon came in, mm-hmm. and I go to find him, and he's sitting in Jeff Shannon's office. It's Jeff Shannon and Matt Kinnear, and they're talking about the security of Israel.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about the World Games coming up, and we're talking about, you know, it was a private conversation, but we were talking about the, what's the word I would use?
Jeff Shannon was explaining the history of years and years of Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Yes, and the Hamas.
And the Gaza Strip.
Yeah.
I'll come back when you guys start talking about food or lacrosse.
It was a great conversation. Jeff is a wealth of information.
He's a smart guy. He is a smart man.
Yeah, yeah. So it was an interesting conversation, to say the least.
So just the wrap-up of this is we still don't know whether Canada is going to send a team.
That's still I think they are. If they do send a team, it's going to be the quote unquote scabs that have been.
Did you see what Gary Gates said?
Gary Gates said
we're a tight knit community, and Gary I don't Gates think like, anybody's going to go play.
We ain't got no time for that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So
and then there's just the general security. You know, there's a lot of unrest there currently in, you know, around Israel and
Gaza.
Will anybody
Strip.
Get some cold feet from some of the teams that are supposed to be playing? I hope not. I mean,
absolutely.
But it would. It's going to be a tenuous situation.
Yep. I think that's a good way to put it.
Well, on that note, you know what's not going to be tenuous. What's going to be fun and exciting is Sideline Swap.
Oh, look at you. I thought you... Good thing you didn't forget that read.
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college gear. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com. Or download the iPhone app today, sidelineswap.com. Then when are you heading up?
So I will leave Thursday evening. I'm doing the radio with Westwood One. I'll be joining Dave Ryan and Jason Horowitz on the air. So we'll do interviews all day Friday. Saturday, you've got the semis. Then Sunday, for the second year in a row for NCAA.com, I will be doing the D2, D3 championships. So a lot of work, but it should be a lot of fun. And then Monday, you got the championship.
All right. Well, if you see Dixie up there, be sure to say hello.
Say hello. Give me a shout out, man. Or, you know, come up and say hi. Hopefully you enjoy the podcast, and be great to catch up with fans.
If you like what you heard, please subscribe or leave a rating on iTunes and share it with a friend. You can reach out to us on Twitter. Or you can send me an email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. And please call in with your comments and rants and
suggestions and feedback from Memorial Day weekend. That number is 443-595-7020. 443-595-7020. We'd love to hear from you. Sure to leave your name and where you're calling from. Also, don't forget to check out the other podcasts here at Inside Lacrosse. There's a new one every day. Have a great week and enjoy the games. Happy Memorial Day. God bless America.
This is getting better by the minute. You got to leave that in.